Blog Talk Radio.
If you find yourself in trouble, count on me, my friend. I'll get right up in trouble's face. You won't see him again. I've got the backbone, American. I've got the heart, American. I've got the will, American. Will you stand up, don't sit down? Stand up, don't back down. Stand up, shout it out. Stand up, let's make it loud. American, American.
Welcome to another exciting show with Southern Sense on Blog Talk Radio. So turn up the volume and enter our chat room, or grab your phones, call in, and join the conversation. Help us to restore the republic to this country and inspire the majority to be silent no longer.
Well, look me straight in the eye. Tell me what you see. I'll tell the truth every time. Yes, you can count on me. I've got the backbone, American. I've got the heart, American. I've got the will, American. Will you stand up, don't sit down? Stand up, don't back down. Stand up and shout it out. Stand up, let's make it loud. American, 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 American.
Thank God it's Friday. And it's Southern Sense here on Blog Talk Radio. I'm your hostess with the mostest, the radio chick, Annie. And as usual, my co-host, Cool Mike, is out campaigning for his candidate. And his election is November 5th, so hopefully he'll be back with us after November 5th. He is sorely missed. I do believe Doc Jones should be calling in shortly to co-host with me. I hope he's awake. Otherwise, someone wake up Doc Jones and tell him to call in. Anyway, we've got a great guest here this afternoon. It's Ellis Washington of World News Daily, WorldNet Daily. He's also a college professor, a constitutionalist, and we'll have a fun afternoon with him. He's the former staff editor of the Michigan Law Review and a law clerk at Rutherford Institute. He's a professor of constitutional law, legal ethics, and contracts at the National Paralegal College. So we will welcome him about a quarter after the hour. And I want to remind everyone that on Wednesday, it was the 30th anniversary of the bombing of the Beirut barracks, where 241 Marines were killed. So 30 years ago, this past Wednesday, we remember the Beirut barracks bombing. And unfortunately, you don't hear much about it on the news, and we should just take a moment to remember that horrific event. We have been under attack by Islamic terrorists, and that Beirut bombing was one of the worst attacks that we had experienced up until 9/11. So please remember those 241 U.S. Marines killed in the barracks 31 years ago, this past Wednesday, the 23rd. Every show we do, we begin with a dedication to a fallen hero. And this one is going to go out to Maureen. This goes out to Let me get the right piece of paper here. This goes out to Marine Lance Corporal Jeremiah Collins, Jr. He was killed this past October 5th in Helmand Province, Afghanistan. So we dedicate this show to him. Collins was assigned to Combat Logistics Regiment 2, 2nd Marine Logistics Group, 2nd Marine Expeditionary Force, Camp Lejeune, North Carolina. He loved the Marines. He wanted to protect his country. He was willing to look down the eye of a gun for country, said Shannon Collins, Jeremiah's mother. I think his enlistment is more about showing people that he could be something great. Collins said her son was an exceptional Marine who was determined and always went above and beyond. He graduated boot camp with a 300 PFT, that is the physical fitness test, which is the highest you can get, Collins said. Collins was stationed in Camp Lejeune in North Carolina before leaving to support combat operations in Helmand Province, Afghanistan. Samuel Sanchez is in deep mourning. He tells Fox 6 News Collins was his longtime best friend. A person that will push you, keep you going, won't let anything knock him down, said Sanchez. He was a great man, and I will never forget him. Collins is a graduate of Milwaukee Hamilton High School. He graduated 2012. And I do have a clip from Collins' mother, and I'm going to try to pull it up. And again, I apologize because I am missing my co-host. And this is Lance Corporal Collins' mother. We can let her words speak for us.
I know I have a lot ahead of me when he comes home, and I'm trying to remain composed as best I can. I have my moments, but this is just a pain that is unreal. It's just inside of you, and there's nothing you can do to move it. I opened the door, and it was just the ugliest vision I could ever see was these two well-dressed Marines with their hats in their hands. I think we need to remember that these young men and young women are going to places that the majority of us would not sign up to go to. And the one thing that they deserve is to be guaranteed the benefits, whether that's to them, to their families, to their best friends, to whoever. And families shouldn't have to worry about how they're going to bury their child. To know that the government shutting down will delay their ability to handle their business, some people just won't be able to do it. And I just, for the sacrifice that our kids are making at the age that they're making them, I don't understand how this can be a benefit that's withheld. I won't ever understand it.
Grieving families of fallen U.S. service members are expressing outrage over a lapse in government benefits designed to help them pay for funeral costs or travel to meet the flag-draped coffins of their loved ones. The government is hurting the wrong people, said Shannon Collins, who lost her son, Marine Lance Corporal Jeremiah M. Collins, Jr. Families shouldn't have to worry about how they're going to bury their child, she told NBC News. Families shouldn't have to worry about how they're going to feed their family if they don't go to work this week. 17 U.S. service members have died this month, but as a result of government shutdown, none of their families had received the $100,000 normally sent within 3 days of the ultimate sacrifice, also known as the death gratuity. The situation was detailed by a series of NBC News and Fox News stories over the past week. Last week, the Fisher Foundation announced that it would step in to cover the expenses with temporary grants. So we thank the Fisher Foundation, and we dedicate the show to Lance Corporal Collins. We dedicate this song, My Name is America, by Todd Allen Herndon, to all of the men who have served and the women who have served, who are serving, and who will serve. God bless them all. They deserve our eternal thanks.
Born in the grip of oppression, I fought for my liberty. I paid with the blood of my people. Freedom has never been free. Now my door's always open to dreamers and friends. when I'm attacked. I protect and defend, because my name is America. I stand proud and free. My name is America. Don't tread on me. I cannot be broken. I cannot be shamed. If you hurt me, I'll get stronger, and I'll rise up from the flames. Taken from others, others gave it to me. They believe in the virtues I stand for, my respect for humanity. Now I'm challenged by tyrants who envy my power, but their vicious deeds become my finest hour, because my name is America. I stand proud and free. My name is America. Don't tread on me. I cannot be broken. I cannot be shamed. If you hurt,
America by Todd Allen Herndon. And remember, you can catch the contest we have giving away his autographed DVD of that song on southernsense.webs.com. So check it out under the membership tab. I want to welcome a fantastic guest, a learned scholar, and an absolute all-around great guy, Ellis Washington. Good afternoon, Mr. Washington.
Hi, Ann, and thank you so much for having me on your show.
Oh, it is our pleasure. I mean, I can go into your credentials, which I did at the start of the show, and it leaves my head spinning, all the things that you are involved in, and I want to thank you for your fight for our republic.
Oh, yes, absolutely. I mean, and this can come out in the show, but I was born and raised in Detroit, and Detroit has fallen on hard times of late. You know, we're in bankruptcy. Our former mayor just got 28 years in prison. And so I grew up in the hood and despair. So I'm used to a good fight. I had to fight virtually from my mother's womb. And so dealing with Obama and the Democrats, that's not that big of a deal to me. I'm going to keep on fighting.
Bless your heart. You know, there's so many things, because last night I was putting my notes together for today's show, and I thought I'd follow a certain pattern. But as soon as you turn on the news today, everything just goes topsy-turvy, and you don't even know where to start. But I'm going to just start throwing this first one at to you. Was Grayson's new campaign ad to raise funds, where he's got the Ku Klux Klan cross and Tea Party on it.
Yes, you know, and thanks so much for bringing that up. I mean, I could tell your show is an excellent show, and you really stay up on, you're right on the cutting edge of what Rush calls societal evolution, and that representative great. And I mean, I know everyone has a right to nominate to office who they want, but the people in Florida are not, in my opinion, being represented by this guy who I think a couple of years ago was thrown out of the office for, you know, equally ridiculous remarks like that, equating the Tea Party with the KKK. It's just the opposite. The Tea Party is a godsend to bring us back to Reagan conservatism, to bring us back to the rule of law and a limited government and a strong military and all those things that Ronald Reagan spoke of 30 years ago that the establishment Republican Party, since Reagan left office, they was like good riddance. Now we don't have to, you know, follow that conservative rhetoric anymore. We could just go back to being the Democrat Party light, or, you know, socialism light. That's what our establishment Republicans are doing. But this Representative Grayson, to do that, let me tell you what he's doing. He's being a demagogue, and he knows that in his district there are leftists that are just so reactionary and hate conservatism so much that this is just red meat for them, and they'll just eat it up. But thank goodness the majority of the American people know their history. They know who founded the KKK. They know what party has been against black interests for decades and continue to be against interests in helping minorities to have a piece of the American dream. It is not the Republican Party, and it's not conservative, and it's definitely not the Tea Party.
And that you can say for sure, because I'm the founder of the Tea Party down here in Beaufort, South Carolina, and the last thing we would do would be something like that. Because right after Grayson pulled that stunt, Democratic Representative Steve Cohen then turned around and called the Tea Party domestic enemies.
Yes. Yes, I've heard that too. And see, and this is why we need radio shows like yours, and we need to multiply by the thousands and also get to get on TV and all aspects of the media, the newspapers, et cetera, because the left have been in charge of the media to a large degree for so many decades now that they feel emboldened. They're arrogant. They have hubris that they could just spout just unsubstantiated nonsense, like, you know, equating the Tea Party with terrorists, because they know that's the opposite of what the Tea Party stands for. But yet there are people that some conservatives like Rush have called what is that, the phrase that he uses all the time lately, low-information voters, that they'll just eat that up, and they don't, you know, they don't have the proper education, or they're just so partisan that they'll just believe it. And it's unfortunate because that number is growing, and we just have to try to have shows like yours to educate people with the right knowledge about American history and the Tea Party. The Tea Party are true patriots. They are, in my opinion, they're heroes to hold the Republicans' feet to the fire and to follow constitutional principles.
Thank you so much for your compliments. I don't feel like I deserve them, honestly, but we do our best to try. One of the things that got me was I ran into one of our Tea Party members in the grocery store the other day, and she's a feisty little gal, and she was saying, well, maybe you ought to think about changing the name and not use Tea Party. And I thought about it, and, you know, I walked away and says, well, I'll give it some thought. And I thought, and I thought, and I said, heck no. All right, I'm going to keep the Tea Party. Let them throw whatever they want at me, because I'll stand up and I'll defend it. You know, the more that they hurl the insults, I think the stronger it makes us. And I think what the left is trying to do is the more they insult us, the more they try to think that they're pulling us down a peg. And I think it's the exact opposite. Instead, you're getting us angry. They keep on poking that bee's nest. And I think come this next election cycle, they're going to get stung big time. What's your opinion?
Oh, yes. Yes, you're absolutely right, Anne. A few months ago, I write a weekly column for WorldNet Daily and Global Politician and Renew America and several other websites. Your listeners, if they're interested, I have a website called elliswashingtonreport.com. Well, anyway, a couple of months ago, I wrote an essay called The Cult of Acceptance. One of the things about the left that I do admire, and this is one of the few things I admire, they're really expert at exploiting human nature while at the same time, at least publicly, not saying that they don't believe in it. They do believe in it, but they believe in it for nefarious Machiavellian reasons. And one of the things they do is like that lady did to you in the grocery store, and by trying to get you to have a little self-doubt, just a little bit, just plant that seed of self-doubt. Yeah, maybe the Tea Party is a lightning rod kind of term. It's bringing more negative attention than positive attention. Maybe we should rename our organization and not be associated with that. See, once you take that step, which you didn't do, thankfully, but others that might have taken that step, certainly the establishment Republicans have taken that step, and they don't want to align themselves for the most part. I mean, you have exceptions with Rand Paul and Mike Lee and my main man, Senator Ted Cruz out of Texas. I love those guys, and I wish we had, you know, 100 more like them in the Senate and 435 of them in the House. But anyway, let me just say this to your audience very clearly. Hold on to Tea Party principles. Hold on to the Tea Party name. It's very important. And one of the things I love about it is that there's no single leader that the leftist media can co-opt and twist and pervert or catch with, you know, somebody that's not his wife or some other scandal that the, you know, left likes to do. If they do find a Tea Party leader that's doing something bad, that's no reflection on the Tea Party movement as a whole. We still stand for the Constitution, the rule of law. We stand against activist Supreme Court justices. We stand against establishment GOP that are selling out our rights down the river, trying to reach across the aisle to the Democrats. We stand against all of those things, just like our Tea Party forefathers did in the 18th century when they dumped that tea in the Boston Harbor in the 1770s.
Yeah, now, it's not just the left that's going after it. We're finding now that there's also an attack by some of the hierarchy in the military, and I'm sure you've caught these stories, and Todd Starnes has been following this a lot, and I think he's the one that's basically broke it open. And I heard about this a little more than a week ago, maybe 2 weeks ago. There was a fort in Mississippi, Fort Hood in Texas, and I know there was a third one that I heard this out of, that they were labeling, was it American Family Association, evangelical Christians and the Tea Party as extremists and threatening to court-martial anyone who donated to the groups or attended any meetings. Had you heard about that?
Yes, and I think I saw an article about that on The Blaze, and they tried to deny it when it first came out. I think Todd Starnes has been doing great work on that. But when his articles first started coming out, the administration tried to deny it. But then somebody was able to get a camera into one of the seminars, and you can see they showed the overhead projection of what the seminar was about. And just time and time again, it was Christian, the Tea Party, American Family Association was being equated with terrorist group and Muslim extremists. And the irony about that is, while they was equating them with forms of religious terrorism, presumably of the Islamic kind, they didn't use the word Islamic terrorist because, as you know, that word, Islamist, Muslim, in a negative light in government documents, was purged years ago by the Obama administration and the Justice Department. And so my question then to them would be, and how can you fight an enemy, Muslim, not all Muslims obviously, but Muslim extremists and those that support them with their offerings and things like that, how can you fight against those kind of people, Obama administration, but yet you won't call them by their names? Muslim extremists, Islamic extremists. You can't do it. But yet you will use the most incendiary rhetoric against Christians, against Christian groups that have a high recommendation, the American Family Association and others. You will use the most incendiary language against them by the military, of which President Obama is the chief officer. That is really beyond the pale, and it needs to be exposed. And thank you for doing that on your great radio program.
Oh, thank you so very much. But, you know, if anyone knows anyone, if anyone had served in the military, they would understand this, because especially when they go into the battlefield, it's, I'm going to say it outright, God is at the at their hand. You know, they
yeah.
look to God to protect them, to bring the fight the way it should. And there's countless stories of miracles happening on the battlefield. And I recently did a dedication to a Army Sergeant Major, jacket off. There was the holes in the jacket, but there was no holes in him.
Wow.
And, you know, there are so many amazing things. And then to try to strip God away from the soldier is one of the most reprehensible thing. I mean, when I did the dedication, I was dedicating to a Marine who was one of the ones that was killed, and his body came back to Dover during the government shutdown, and his family was denied the death benefit, you know, to help bury him. And when we do this to our military, I mean, it's no greater slap in the face than to do things like this to them. I just don't understand it.
Well, it's pure partisan politics by the left, by Obama, and this goes straight up to him. And because this man, I mean, right from the beginning of his presidency, your listeners may remember there were several incidences, and you can Google this. Just Google President Obama covers up religious icon at Georgetown, or just Obama in Georgetown, and you'll see at least on two occasions he did it there, and he did it at several other places too, where he went to these churches, and you know Georgetown is a very venerated Catholic institution. Although it's been taken over by liberals, they still maintain at least some facially religious underpinnings. But yet that was too much for Obama, because he has this Messiah complex. He went there and covered up iconography related to Jesus Christ, and because he didn't want that in the background while he spoke. To me, that is just outrageous, and it belies in a type of malignant narcissism that he has, where he has this God complex, and he cannot stand to be second fiddle to anybody, including God. He has to be the top dog in everything. And so his whole administration seems to be geared toward deconstructing religion, our Judeo-Christian values, the rule of law, and on and on and on, the things that our founding fathers venerated. He's hell-bent on deconstructing that, and he has a lot of people, unfortunately, on both sides of the aisles, Democrats and Republicans, that are helping him do that. And it just really breaks my heart as an American, as somebody that loves this country, to see it go down like it is, and so few people other than Ted Cruz and Mike Lee and Rand Paul and a couple of others that are standing strong against this liberal fascism.
Yeah, and I got to say, here in the great state of South Carolina, we got Tim Scott and Trey Gowdy. Man.
Oh, yeah, Trey Gowdy. I'm a really big fan of him. And Tim Scott's doing good, too. He's a little quiet. I wish he'd speak up a little bit more. But that Trey Gowdy, man, he's a rising star, and I really wish him a very good, great career.
Yeah. I'm going to just go off a little bit differently, because we were talking about the military for a bit, and someone sent this to my inbox on LinkedIn, and there's a company out there. What the heck is the name of this company? Oh, Armatrex. And they've created this, yeah, new gun, and it's linked to your wristwatch. In other words, your wristwatch has the biometrics in it, and the gun cannot be fired unless the biometrics in the watch match the gun. And
yeah.
This went up on a law enforcement site on LinkedIn, in which I'm a member of, and we're all looking at this, and it's like, no way in heck would you ever find me carrying one of these things, because it limits the amount of time you can have the weapon actively fire. It has to be within a certain distance. And we were all thinking about this. How many times have we broken our watches, you know, on patrol?
Yeah.
And then now you're stuck with a weapon that won't fire. And the more we looked at it, the more we saw it was a blatant attack on our gun ownership. It's a gun control
weapon.
Yeah,
the Second Amendment.
Yeah.
Oh, absolutely. As you were speaking, at first I was like, oh, maybe this is, you know, the next generation, it's a good idea. But the more you start speaking about it, which I hadn't heard this story before, I'm like, this sounds like straight out of the, you know, the billionaire leftist George Soros playbook. You know, he loves gun control and he loves disarming America. So you notice, Ann, that these leftists, no matter if they call themselves conservative Democrats or socialists or Marxists or progressives or liberals, whatever new name they want to call themselves, they always just seem hell-bent on disarming America. And then you have to ask yourself, why? Why this hatred, this fear of the Second Amendment? It's because when you look back throughout history, going back to this, the American Revolution, one of the first things the colonists were rebelling against was these high taxes, the sugar tax, the paper tax, and the tea tax, but there were some other taxes that dealt with military weaponry and ammunition and gunpowder and things like that that the founding fathers found onerous to them being able to defend themselves. And that was the way that the tyrannical government of King George III and the British Empire was trying to take away the gun rights of the colonists and keep them from defending themselves. That's why once we won the revolution, and right after religion and the right to address your government for grievances and the freedom of the press, right after those important constitutional guarantees were secured in the Bill of Rights, what was the next one in the Second Amendment? The right to bear arms, because our founding fathers knew this was one of the rights that the tyrannical British government under King George III tried to take away.
You're absolutely right on that. And the more we bandied around this new weapon they call a smart gun, the more we said it is one of the worst ideas that anyone has ever come up with. And each and every person in that law enforcement chat were saying there's no way that any law enforcement officer would want to carry it. So if a law enforcement officer is not going to carry it, why would a civilian want to have something like this to protect? You know, by the time you make sure your watch is activated and the burglar is coming in the house, I'm sorry, you're dead.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it's like adding a whole level of socialist bureaucracy just to the act of shooting a gun. I mean, they're already demanding that you lock your gun up, you got to take the bullets out. I'm like, man, and I understand, you know, there's safety for kids and things like that, and I'll appreciate that, but the whole idea about having a gun is if somebody's breaking into your house, you got to be able to go to a certain place quickly and not fumble around getting bullets and everything else, unlocking. You know what I mean? Because
yeah,
the guys that's coming in, believe me, I'm from Detroit, and we have a big crime problem here where the police won't even come unless there's blood or death. And then they may come. But if you're just talking about a home invasion or a carjacking, you just thank God that you're still alive and don't bother the police with that, because they won't come. As a matter of fact, 911 oftentimes will hang up on you. That's the city where I'm from, and that's where we're going.
I can understand that, because I was a beat cop in Brooklyn. And it was
before
a lot of the gentrification was going on. Matter of fact,
yeah,
my first foot post actually was in front of the building that Serpico was shot in.
That was
my very first foot post. Matter of fact, that first day I had an arrest.
So, wow.
I understand.
Yeah, you know what I'm talking about.
Absolutely, absolutely. Now, this article came out of from the African American Gun Club, and then Ben caught it later on the news. A mother in Virginia, her daughter was being assaulted, 15-year-old daughter was being assaulted by a bunch of boys, and she came out with a firearm. She fired a warning shot, and the mother gets arrested.
Oh, yeah, I heard about her.
Of all things. And now the worst part about the whole thing is the daughter ended up staying with the grandmother, but she has since disappeared, and no one knows where she's at. And all because the cops decided to arrest a mother defending her child.
That's amazing. I mean, I'm trying to figure out, like, on what grounds. I mean, if she had a gun permit, she fired a warning shot, I think that was great that she even did that, because it sounds
isn't
like
that what
they were in the
Joe
process.
Biden told us to do that? Didn't he say
Yes, he sure did. And he was celebrated for it. Oh, my goodness.
It's,
Go ahead, I'm sorry.
I'm saying sometimes you just shake your head. Like I said, I had notes put together last night for a direction to go in, but all this stuff has been popping up over the last, you know, 12 hours. You just don't even know where to begin, because the assault on conservatives, on people that believe in the Constitution, the things that are in there that are their rights, are being attacked in every which direction, and sometimes you don't even know where to start your fight.
No, you're absolutely right, and it just seems like, Anne, that, you know, strong, and let me emphasize this word, articulate, conservative, I just wish just to have somebody that can stand on their 2 feet, get in front of a camera, not say, you know, repeatedly, and just explain in simple, clear terms what the foundational principles of conservatism is, what the rule of law is, what the Constitution is, and how important it is that all aspects of the government, the legislative branch with Congress, the executive branch with the president, and especially the judicial branch with the Supreme Court and other lesser courts, they all have separated, divisible powers that are only applicable to these certain branches, and each branch is not supposed to go over into other branches. But we seem like you were saying, and with the left, every day they're just hitting us with more and more craziness. You don't even know where to begin. And I think that's just part of their plan and their Machiavellian tactics, just to wear you out, that people will just say, well, I give up. I'm just going to turn inward, worry about me and my family, and basically the heck with society. That's the wrong position to take, because if you take that position, then their tactics of divide and conquer will win.
Absolutely. We had a Tea Party meeting just last week, and someone turned around and they were bringing up all these different subjects and things that they want to put into the fight. And I said, wait a minute. Before you go into 15 different directions, think about that. Why don't we pick and choose the fights that are worth fighting? You know,
right.
If you go in so many different directions, you spread yourself way too thin, and you're going to lose in every single fight. If you concentrate on what is really, really important at the moment, then we can win. And I think that's what we have to learn to do. You know, learn to pick. You know, they're throwing things about gun control, but that is something that's down the road. We've got an immediate fight right now, which is the budget and Obamacare. And I think those are the two important fights that we all should be concentrating on.
And one way to best fight that is through the political process. You know, they said millions. I'm not quite sure of the number. I've seen different numbers from 6 to 16 million Republican voters just sat home. And because they weren't really thrilled with the choice for the Republican nominee, you know, Mitt Romney, they saw him as the father of Obamacare, you know, years before Obamacare came out, which is true. And they just like, forget it, I'm not going to vote. Well, like you were saying, you can't fight multiple battles. Pick one, two, or three and focus on that. Like, let's focus on the budget. Let's focus on getting rid of or at least delaying Obamacare. And most importantly, and let's focus on the 2014 elections next year, where we can hopefully take back the Senate and have both houses of Congress, so that we can, like the framers wanted, have a check and balance against the powers of the executive branch. Because if you just give Obama... he's got the presidency, and then you give him majorities in the Senate and the House like he had his first 2 years, that will be horrible for this country.
And I completely agree, because right now here in South Carolina, we got the fight to get rid of Lindsey Graham, but he pulled a swift one. He sat down with the GOP chair. We tossed out Chad Conley because he was not what he claimed he was going to live up to. Instead, his self-appointed second-in-command, Matt Moore, is now the GOP chair, and he's not much better. And Matt Moore sat down with Lindsey Graham. They had a one-on-one meeting, And next thing we know, the lawsuit that the GOP was backing to close the primary here in South Carolina, they dropped out of it. The main backer, the most powerful force that we could have had to help us win for a closed primary was the South Carolina GOP, and they backed out because Lindsey Graham needs the crossover voters. He needs the independent voter and the crossover voter to win the primary. And he pulled a swift one, and we've got one heck of an uphill battle to take that primary back from him.
Well, I really hope that the good people of South Carolina can do that. That Lindsey Graham, he sounds like he wants to be John McCain Part 2, doesn't he?
He is. He actually is John McCain Part 2. And even worse, last night George W. Bush came out with an endorsement for him. So, you know, there it goes. Rhinos are showing up again.
Right. Now, that's really interesting because you can't get George W. Bush to speak on anything. I mean, after he got his presidential library, that's the only time I really saw him out in public. And that's just a vanity monument to his legacy, which, in my opinion, is not that great because him and his father, and then you throw Clinton in the middle there, they systematically moved away from the Reagan Revolution of lower taxes, a strong military, and restoration of American exceptionalism. They kept moving away from that. I mean, with George Bush and that No Child Left Behind boondoggle with education, trillions of dollars, and letting Ted Kennedy write the education bill, it's like, are you insane, George Bush? Why would you let, of all people, Ted Kennedy write the education bill? You know he's going to write it to hurt, basically it's going to really fall hardest on my people. I used to be a teacher in Detroit public school system. It was so bad, and it made me go to law school. Now, for somebody to leave teaching to go to the expense and the hell of law school, you know you must have been in a bad situation. Well, that's what it was 20-plus years ago when I decided to leave the public schools, and it's even worse now. Teachers and getting threatened left and right by the students, some of them getting shot almost on a weekly basis in Detroit. It's just insane.
No, I completely agree. I completely agree because in New York City, you know, we had officers in the schools, and I'm sure you probably had something similar up in Detroit.
Yes, we did.
Yeah, now, you wrote an interesting article, Affirmative Action, Affirmative Slave Chains, and I loved it.
Oh, yeah, that was my last article I wrote last week.
Yeah. Now, do you want to explain?
Oh, yes, I'd be happy to. Basically, what I was trying to do was take a fresh look at the assumptions that John F. Kennedy and basically the white liberal establishment had back 50 years ago when they have created affirmative action. It was created on March 6, 1961, where John F. Kennedy signed an executive order, 10925, which created affirmative action. As we said, that the government employees are not to discriminate against any employer or applicant for employment because of race, creed, or color, or national origin. And then they used the term, and to take affirmative action to assure that applicants are employed and that employees are treated during employment without regard to race, creed, or color, or national origin. Well, when you look at that, even though it sounds egalitarian, even utopian, it sounds nice, but how can you get rid of discrimination based on race, creed, or color, or national origin unless you take those factors into consideration? And if you take them into consideration, how will they be manifested? Well, we've seen now over 50 years of affirmative action, they're manifested themselves with quotas, with statistics, with head counting. I'm here in Michigan. University of Michigan is the main institution that's brought before the Supreme Court about 2 weeks ago regarding this, if affirmative action is still going to be legal, or at least can you use race in college applications. And I went to the University of Michigan. I have a graduate degree from there, and believe me, let me just say this, Ann, just to cut to the chase. affirmative action, and this is from a black perspective, from a black conservative perspective, it really just gets white liberals off the hook for years and years and years of racial discrimination against blacks by letting blacks into a university that they maybe don't have the grades to get into. But then this is the dirty little secret. If they get their degrees, and most of them don't because they can't do the work, but the few that do, what kind of job are they going to get if your employer is looking at your degree from Harvard or Yale or University of Michigan and say, oh, this is just an affirmative action welfare baby. We're not going to hire him because he really didn't earn his degree. So you're giving somebody a degree that's not really respected in society. Those people become disillusioned, hardened, frustrated over the years. But what kind of program is going to help them to deal with the negative effects of affirmative action? And so that's why I called it not affirmative action, but affirmative slave chains, because that's all it's done to us. It's kept us chained down, frustrated, depressed, and most important, constant voters on the Democrat Party plantation. And that has to stop.
No, I completely agree, because actually I was on the opposite end of affirmative action when I was told I couldn't be hired because they had to meet a quota. You know, it didn't matter what your qualifications were. It didn't matter that you desperately needed a job, but, you know, you just did not fit the quota that they were required to hire. And, it cuts both ways, unfortunately. You know,
it really does. And like at U of M, they have some statistics that in 2005, before the court in the Bollinger case knocked out affirmative action, blacks at U of M were 6.5% of the population. After that case, in 2012, where they got the latest statistics, it went from 6.5% to 4.74%. And that's a 32% decline, even though in all the other categories, white students, even foreign students, the numbers rose up during 2005 to 2012. With blacks, it dropped 32%, and they're blaming that on the court suspending affirmative action. That may well be true, but my question would be, the blacks that got in, do they really get in on their ability? And that's what it should be. Whether you're a woman, whether you're black or Asian or white or whatever, you should be judged by your ability. Isn't that what Martin Luther King said? Don't judge me by the color of my skin, but by the content of my character. Affirmative action judges people by the color of their skin, and that's racism.
Yeah, and that's the very basic thing that you try to explain to people, and they say, oh, no, by not doing affirmative action, that's racism. No. You know, you're basing this by the color of their skin. So, yes, you're right. It's racism. And sometimes it's like beating someone over the head and you're hitting a cement with a sock. It's not working.
You're absolutely, yeah, and like I said earlier, and affirmative action was created not so much to help blacks. That's what the rhetoric says, to help blacks and to remedy past discrimination. No, it was to assuage white guilt and the historical horrific, invidious racism of slavery, a couple of hundred years of slavery, and then 100 years of Jim Crow, and basically after Jim Crow in 65, when the voting rights and the Civil Rights Act were passed by LBJ in 64 and 65, now we've had basically that's about 40 years of institutional racism that affirmative action has not remedied. People with a two-term black president, are black people in Detroit and Houston and Dallas and Cincinnati and Los Angeles, all over America, there are less blacks employed now than it was 30 years ago when Reagan was in office. How could that be? I thought Messiah Obama was going to remedy all of the racism, but things have gotten worse under his administration.
That's true. Now, one of the things that we come across, you mentioned you're a college professor, and I bet you see this also, that, you know, students show up in your class or sign up for your classes that don't show up, don't come in with the books. Some of them don't even come in with pen and paper. They're there because they're on some sort of either a grant or some other subsidy from the government. So they're getting welfare, they're getting Section 8 housing, they're getting SNAP, they're getting the tuition to go to school. But what they're basically doing is they're collecting the checks, but not, their intention is never to really actually graduate. They just show up to so they can get their money and then go home. You know, are you finding that?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, a lot. And it's really a shame because it's making a mockery of education. And when you have these people sitting in these seats that are not really taking advantage of the graciousness of the taxpayer and giving them the grant or a scholarship, then that's a seat that could be occupied by a student that's serious about education and looks at going to class as an honor and won't take their education for granted. And I just wish they would stop all of this insanity, but it seems like as part of the liberal, progressive, Machiavellian tactics, divide and conquer, and that's what they're doing.
Yeah, but wasn't the Occupy movement a lot about getting that free tuition?
Yeah, but they don't understand nothing is free. See, they don't understand basic economics. Most of them have never heard of Karl Marx. They don't know what Marxism is. They don't know that it's linked to socialism and communism and liberalism and progressivism. They don't know or have read Karl Marx's 1848 treatise, The Communist Manifesto, where he said quite plainly, my life's goal is to dethrone God and to destroy capitalism. Now, I don't know about you, Anne, but I can understand English pretty good, and I know you can too. If you believe in a system that wants to dethrone God and destroy capitalism, and the political left in this country, the Democrat Party, has totally embraced that philosophy, then to call them socialists or Marxists or even communists, that's not much of a threat, especially when you see right now under Obama, with Obamacare, he's trying to take over one-sixth of the economy by mandating that everyone has to have insurance, and eventually it's going to destroy the private health care industry by design to force everybody into a one-size-fits-all government health care system. That's socialist, that's Marxist, and that's anti-American.
And that's absolutely correct. You know, looking at the Obamacare, you know, here they have 3 years. They had more than 3 years to put together the website, right? And it's supposed to look like something from Kayak. And someone threw out the quip, well, why didn't they have Kayak build the website for them? But for 3 years, they've got I don't know how many different vendors and how many – billions of dollars did this thing cost?
Yeah, I've heard about $700 billion so far.
And it's still not ready. So their answer to this debacle is to get more people, hire more people to work on it and throw more money at it.
Right.
Wouldn't it be the opposite? You know, get rid of some of these vendors, especially this one out of Canada, CGI,
Canada,
I believe.
Yeah,
it is.
I heard about them.
And they're the ones that put the failed Canadian system together. They've got one thing they succeeded at is to putting the one for Canada together, which doesn't work. So they get hired to put ours together, which doesn't
work.
Right,
and people in Canada that got the money, guess where they're coming to get their health care? America! But people, you know what, I just have to calm myself down because it's just so frustrating. Like I said, I was born in the hood. I was born in Detroit, born to a single mother, struggled all my life to get my education, and I don't feel like that, you know, I got very many breaks from the government, which is good because it just taught me independence. Like, I remember climbing up those stairs in the hood at the local library, which was called the Madam C.J. Walker branch. when I was 5 years old. And I remember going to that library so much that the librarian would have books for me set aside to help me in my reading. See, that's education that I got on my own. But unfortunately, Ann, most people feel like they have to go somewhere to get educated. And if you do that, you're a prime candidate not to get educated, but to get indoctrinated and ultimately to get miseducated. And that's where we are. And in America, most people don't realize. Do you know how old the NEA is, the National Education Association? This usually shocks most people. It was founded in 1857. I'm a law professor. That was the same year as a notorious case called Dred Scott versus Sanford that legalized slavery. Hello? 2 years later, 1859, a racist polemical book, pseudoscientific book by Charles Darwin called The Origin of Species came out. So you see, a lot of these things that are happening, you know, you talk about the 60s, the 60s, the hippies and blah, blah, blah. It's not the 1960s you should be worried about. It's the 1860s. These things have been going on, miseducating millions of people, putting in a book like Charles Darwin's Origin of Species that indoctrinates evolution atheism and replacing the Christian worldview. How are you going to fight against that unless you realize that you're in the midst of a revolution? That's why my two-volume book that just came out a couple of months ago, I titled it The Progressive Revolution, and the subtitle is Liberal Fascism Through the Ages, because I wanted to give a systematic historical critique about what's going on with America and how it's been co-opted by the political left.
Yeah, and I put up on the show page. Yeah, I put up on the show page the link to your website, which is elliswashingtonreport.com, and I also threw it up in the chat room. So if anyone wants to see your books and your writings, they can go to elliswashingtonreport.com. It's fascinating reading your website because you just went into the next area I was going to go into, your article on secular humanism, and you say it's evolution atheism. I mean, the way you throw words together, you string words together, it's very, very
amazing.
It drives
the left. Wow, and that article went viral. And I know when my articles go viral, and that means I struck a nerve. And while that's good, my main intent with my website is to educate particularly our youth, those that are maybe late middle school age, high school, college, even graduate school, law school. That's where my website is the majority of my articles are designed to try to help because it's these young people, and after you and I are gone, they're going to be left with this mess, and they need to have the education to know how to fight what they're fighting, this Leviathan monster called the federal government. How are you going to fight against it if you don't know that you're in the midst of a revolution? And so that's why I designed the website, and thank you so much for linking to it on your website.
Yeah, and people, when they hit the podcast later on, will see it up on the show page, so they can always click it any time. But when you were talking about secular, I'm going to stumble over these words, secular humanism, it's basically what I've been saying the entire time. They want to take God away from us so that we worship at the altar of government. And you had talked about that earlier as Obama is behaving like he's a king, he's a monarch.
Oh, you're absolutely right, yes.
All right.
You know,
Go
ahead, I'm sorry.
I was just to say, if you wanted to explain the article.
Just there's a main paragraph in there, if I could just read a little bit of it. It says here, like the loyalists of the colonial period, secular humanists in today's postmodernists all hate the historical fact that the colonists won the American Revolution, thus characterizing America and American exceptionalism as illegitimate and oppressive. Their glorious revolution was the anti-God French Revolution from 1789 to 1799. And what did the French Revolution do? They burned down, destroyed, and co-opted cathedrals, churches, and massacred Christians and other enemies of the Republic by the tens of thousands, including bishops, priests, and nuns. Despite this genocide and upheaval and despair caused by the French Revolution, secular humanists definitely wanted to establish these reactionary atheist ideas like secularism, like humanism, relativism, and later evolution, Marxism, socialism, progressivism, postmodernism, and fascism into every American institution forever. So basically what I'm saying here, Anne, is everybody in America is the result, is the child of two revolutions, the American Revolution, which was from 1775 to 1783, that gave the world the rule of law, a blind judiciary that didn't look at what kind of economic status you had. Eventually, it led to the abolitionist movement and the eradication of slavery. Then there was another revolution that came about 16 years later called the French Revolution. And what did that give us? That gave us evolution. Eventually, it gave us genocide of the church, of religious leaders first, but eventually over time it led to evolution, atheism, eugenics, social Darwinism, liberalism, postmodernism, progressivism, and a whole lot of wicked ideas like the ascendancy of the tyrants in the 20th century, people like Lenin and Stalin and Hitler and Mussolini, Mao, Pol Pot, Franco, on and on and on. It was the 20th century was the golden age of tyrants. And all of them, what did they have in common? They all hated Christianity, and they were all atheists. That's what the foundational precepts are of the Democrat Party, liberalism, and progressivism. And we have to fight that with truth, with courage, and with a never-ending fight. That's my view, Anne.
Absolutely. And it also explains why there's such a heavy attack on Christianity in today's day and age. I mean, we're under assault by the atheists. We're also under assault by these Islamic terrorists. And unfortunately, the atheists have now become aligned and allies of these Islamic terrorists. You know, all of a sudden you cannot say anything against Islam here in the United States, but you can bash the heck out of Christianity.
Yes.
And heaven forbid if you happen to wear your faith on your sleeve, now you're someone that's worse than a leper. And it's somehow or other, we've got to find a way to reverse that.
We do. Absolutely. And our friends in Israel, they're fighting the same battle. Because Obama is sticking the knife in the back to the nation of Israel, and most Christians here in America have a strong affinity for Israel, including myself. I've written a book celebrating Israel's eternal battles against evilness worldwide and people that tried to commit genocide against them called the Nuremberg Trials. It's on my website also. And when I see Obama and how he shamefully treats Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu, having him wait in the dining room while he walks out and goes have dinner with his children, he never had a formal estate, a dinner for Benjamin Netanyahu, yet he did for a Chinese communist leader and other tyrants worldwide. I mean, he's just really an onerous person, that his anti-Semitism, his racism, his anti-Americanism, it just has to be exposed. And I'm just so grateful to you, Anne, and the Yeoman's work, your radio program, Southern Sense, and all the things that you've done. You're shining the light of truth into this dark, evil administration. And I just wish you all the luck to keep on working hard. And anytime you want me to come on your show in the future, I'm just a phone call away. It's been truly an honor.
Oh, thank you so very much. You know, you flatter me. You got me turning absolutely red right now.
Well, you deserve it.
In the interim, I've got the helicopter circling above right now.
No, exactly. Sorry about that.
No, it was funny because my husband and I were coming back from the store just yesterday, and all day on the corner were these vans from Hargrave, and they were doing some work there. And as we were pulling in, my husband goes, "You think that's really telephone people working in, or are they here just to keep an eye on you?"
Yeah. Well, all they got to do is just go online to Southern Sense website. They don't have to spy. You're out in the open. And that's the beautiful thing about the Tea Party. We're doing everything out in the open. There was a Supreme Court justice, the first Jewish justice on the Supreme Court, Louis Brandeis, who said sunlight is the best disinfectant. And he was absolutely right, and that's what the Tea Party's doing. It's trying to shine the light of truth into the government and tell the political bureaucrats and hacks that are ruling over us now, like landlords in the medieval times, enough is enough. Return to the Constitution, return to the rule of law, return to American exceptionalism, and stop all of this Marxist socialism and this progressive propaganda that they're cramming down our throats, particularly with Obamacare and not passing a balanced budget since Obama came into office. Enough is enough.
Yeah, and unfortunately, his idea of compromise, it's his way.
Yes.
That's his compromise. And
exactly.
He's done it, and Boehner has crumbled each and every time. And I keep on saying, when will Boehner realize that he actually really does have a spine? You know, why don't you try to stand up and straighten it up? One of the other things I get angry with, people throw onto my Facebook page stuff that Lindsey Graham's doing. Oh, how wonderful. He's visiting this business up in Anderson. And I just get so angry. And I said, oh, yeah, I'm so proud of Lindsey Graham, the man who, with John McCain, sat down at the White House with the Muslim Brotherhood.
Oh,
I said, oh, yeah, he's really for us. I mean, here he is. He's military, but he's sitting down with our enemies and dining. And I said, that is the worst part, that it was in the People's House, the White House of all places.
Right.
And
how many times has he come on your show to face your prescient, very intelligent line of questioning? He wouldn't dare, because you will just expose him as the massive fraud that he is.
That's true.
That's unfortunate, because, you know, he's a congressman and he should come on shows like yours to explain his horrible anti-American policies.
Yeah, I think I tweaked him a little bit too hard when I got quoted 2 years ago by Politico when I said I would actively work to see he's not reelected. I think that kind of tweaked him a little bit.
Well, you have a good reason to, and he knows what those reasons are. If he would just listen to the show just for 30 minutes, he'll find out a bunch of reasons why you're against him. And it's nothing personal. It's that he calls himself a conservative, he calls himself a Republican, he calls himself a Reagan conservative, but he's not. He's a fake establishment party, cowardly, backstabbing Republican that whenever he sees a real, true blue conservative like a Ted Cruz, like a Mike Lee, what's the first thing he and John McCain do? They take out the long knife and stab him in the back. That's not a conservative. That's a traitor.
Yeah, that is. Oh, yeah, John McCain called us hobbits. So there's a lot of proud hobbits up on Twitter and Facebook.
I like hobbits. I'm a big Lord of the Rings fan. Hobbits are good.
Yeah,
at least it's not Sauron or Saruman. You know, hobbits were the heroes. They were
sure.
But that's okay.
I'm short, so you can call me a hobbit. You're right. I don't mind.
Yeah. I'll wear it with a badge of honor.
Well, we got Halloween coming up. I wonder how many people walking around looking like hobbits this year.
That's right. And I'm sorry I didn't tell you at the beginning of our interview, but I have another engagement I have to go to, so I'm going to have to cut our interview off. Is that okay? And
that is fine.
I'd like to open it up. Okay, in the future, I'm just a phone call, or email is actually a good way to reach me. Please do, and if you get a chance, have your people send me the link to our interview. I want to post it on my website, and I have a radio show that I'm on called Joshua's Trail, and I would love to just have an open-ended invitation. I'll send you a phone number if you ever want to come on our show, which is every Saturday from 8 to 10. Eastern Standard Time. We're in the Detroit area. We would love to have you on anytime you want. just
so very much. Thank you so very much, Ellis. And your website, once again, is elliswashingtonreport.com.
Yes, ma'am.
All right. Thank you, Ellis.
So
you have a great
weekend.
Thank you, too.
And I'll be in touch.
Okay, great.
Bye.
Thank you very much.
Okay.
It's Ellis Washington, and you can find him up on elliswashingtonreport.com and catch his radio show on Saturday, The Joshua Tree. Fantastic, fantastic interview. What a lovely man. I am so glad that we were able to have him on. Anyone that's looking to see where my co-host is, Cool Mike, he is out doing what we always ask people to do, get involved. He's out there campaigning for his candidate, and that election will be coming up November 5th, and hopefully he'll be back right after that. And I want to see, we've got, I'm looking for something here. Rand Paul, I'm looking for something that I want to play over here. And here we go. We got Rand Paul. One thing that we want people to remember is that we've got a lot of scandals going on out there right now. And Obama right now is trotting out immigration once again. It's imperative. It's imperative. This is so important. It has to be done right now, the immigration reform. No, it doesn't have to be done right now. Immigration can sit on the back burner. All we need to do is enforce the existing laws. We don't need a new immigration reform. Just enforce the existing laws. Let law enforcement do its job. What they're trying to do is cover up all the other scandals, the NSA spying, which now we have France is getting pissed off because of spying. It's like 70 million of their citizens have been spied on by the NSA. Germany, Merkel's own phone has been tapped. We've got it coming from Mexico, Brazil. Country after country is coming forward saying our Secret Service is telling us the NSA has been spying on us. So it's not just American citizens. This has gotten out of control. This administration is way, way out of control. And they're doing all this so you forget about the IRS, you forget about the ATF, you forget about the NSA, and you forget about Benghazi. And here we got a little clip from Rand Paul over Benghazi talking points, and he's firing at Hillary Clinton. So let me play this on Rand Paul.
Republican Senator Rand Paul out of Kentucky, a member of the Senate Foreign Relations Committee and Homeland Security Committee with me here, sir. And good morning to you, Senator.
Good morning, Will.
Where are you on this today?
Well, I think one thing that's sort of fascinating is we've had several statements from Hillary Clinton saying she wasn't involved, but now it turns out that her spokesman was involved. Ms. Nuland was writing statements saying, you know what, politically this isn't going to look good. So it sounds like Hillary Clinton's fingerprints are all over these talking points, and, you know, really her resignation was a beginning, but she never really fully accepted culpability. And I think she needs to accept culpability for this disaster in Benghazi.
In addition to Hillary Clinton, well, I guess that's the person you want to talk to then.
Well, yeah, because she's been saying she had nothing to do with these talking points. Sounds like her spokesman, which is essentially her, is emailing back and forth and saying she's having conversations that night, presumably with State Department leadership. I would think that includes Hillary Clinton.
All right. Now, here's Benghazi. They're trying to make us forget about that. They're trying to make us forget about the budget. They're trying to make us ignore Obamacare. You got this thing with the government. They took over 3 years to come up with this computer program so that you can go online and sign up for Obamacare. And you can't even get a proper quote. I pulled up for South Carolina here, just for the area that I live in. I mean, the cheapest policy was over $200. And they're trying to do smoke and mirrors, a lot of smoke and mirrors on us. So you watch it. Watch what they're going to be doing in the news. They're going to go, immigration is more important than anything else. We'll get Obamacare to eventually work. Don't worry about it. We'll fix those little tiny bugs. We're going to throw more taxpayer money at it. We're going to hire more people. So the more people we put on this, the better it should get. Actually, I think with over 5 million lines of code on this thing, you need less people. You need a small core group of people to send the messages are. You don't need more people to put more fingers in the pot and muddy the waters even more. Obamacare is going to be law of the land as of the 1st of January. We're talking about a few months away. This is a clip by a doctor describing what Obamacare will be like, and it's very disturbing. It's a little bit of a five-minute clip, so bear with us, and we're going to play this.
All right, let's see. Jeff, Chicago, Illinois. I know you're not listening on WLS because it's tape delayed there, but WLS Country, how are you listening? Or did you just
I'm
pick up the
listening.
Phone?
Can you hear me?
I can hear you, sir.
Oh, okay, sorry. Yeah, I'm driving, actually, from Chicago to Detroit. But I heard you talking earlier about the government not knowing how to make pencils, and then you talked about brain surgeons, and I happen to be a brain surgeon. So I found your topic quite interesting, and actually just returned from Washington, D.C., where we were reading over what the Obama health care plan would be for advanced neurosurgery for patients over 70, which we all found quite disturbing because as our population gets older, the majority of our patients are getting over 70 that require stroke therapy or aneurysm therapy. And basically what the document stated was if you're over 70 and you come into an emergency room and you're on government-supported care, that you get comfort care.
And wait a minute. What document and where did you hear? What's the source for this?
This is Obama's new health care plan for advanced neurosurgical care.
And who issued this, HHS?
Yes. And basically, they don't call them patients. They call them units. And instead of, they call it ethics panels or ethics committees would get together and meet and decide where the money would go for hospitals and basically for patients over 70 years of age, that advanced neurosurgical care was not generally indicated.
So it's generally going to be denied?
Yes, absolutely.
But let me ask you this. Is this published? Go ahead.
If someone comes in at 70 years of age with a bleed in their brain, I can promise you I'm not going to get a bunch of administrators together on an ethics panel at 2 in the morning to decide that I'm okay to do surgery.
Let me ask you this. Is this published somewhere where the general public, in other words, a pedestrian like me, can get a hold of it? No?
Not yet.
So this was discussed just with your community of neurosurgeons?
Yes, exactly. The AANS and CNS, the American Association of Neurosurgeons, and the Congress of Neurosurgeons, because everybody knows cuts are coming in medicine and reimbursement, and we're the most expensive out of all the fields in medicine, and we're the smallest field. But at 2, 3, 4 in the morning, we're the ones that are in the operating room, and we have to wait for an ethics panel to convene, which are not made of physicians, which are made of administrators, to decide whether a patient should receive our care.
So Sarah Palin was right. We're going to have these death panels, aren't we?
Oh, absolutely. I'm German by heritage, and I've read the Rise and Fall of the Third Reich, and basically if they call them, they don't call them patients, they call them units, and if you're a unit above a certain age, you get comfort care instead of advanced neurosurgical intervention.
Now, this you went to a seminar in Washington, D.C.?
Yeah, where a few of my former partners, two of them have gone to work for, is running the VA system, and one is head of the Congress of Neurosurgeons out of D.C.
And this information is based, you're certain, on representations and information provided by HHS and other government officials?
Yep.
And when will the rest of us become aware of it? After the election?
Probably. I mean, there's so many things that the government keeps under control that are used in surgery called HUD devices or humanitarian use devices that we're allowed to use now because they haven't undergone full FDA approval. And they're just used in surgery because people know it's the right thing to do, but the government can step in at any time like they did 2 months ago with the device and said, you know, this device hasn't met what we want and there's no exact criteria, and then they can take it away from us.
And the people telling you what to do, they don't know how to make a pencil, do they?
Exactly. That's what I'm saying. And, you know, we always joke around it's not brain surgery, but, you know, I did 9 years after medical school and been in training 10 years, and now I have people don't know a thing about what I'm doing, tell me when I can and can't operate.
All right, Jeff, please keep in touch with us. Well, yeah, I have to go, but this was a very, very crucial call. All right, my friend. Thank you. We'll be right back.
All right,
wow.
That was Mark Levin.
So, if you've had any thoughts about how sobering what we're talking about is in front of us, go to the cupboard and look for the Soylent Green, okay? Because you're talking some serious stuff now. What I wanted to bring out more than the shock value of that phone call, which I heard the other day, forwarded out to my email list. There's some other big people around the world that are going to expose it also. Is I wanted you to pay attention to how many times he said administrators and regulators. I'm not going to go into an operating room at 4 in the morning and have a board of administrators make the decision whether I can operate or not.
That is an extremely interesting clip. Talk about smoke and mirrors, and that is what the government has been doing with us. Obamacare is, as they say, the law of the land. So there are going to be a lot of challenges in court over a lot of what is going on in Obamacare as each part of it becomes exposed, and people are going to learn a lot more. And one day it's going to be you who's over 70 and you being wheeled into the hospital emergency room at 2 o'clock in the morning, and it will be you whose funeral the rest of us will be attending because of Obamacare. He is launching an Obamacare Tour 13, which is going to kick off in Dallas, Houston, Miami, Atlanta, Phoenix, Tucson, New Jersey, Tampa, Orlando, Detroit, San Antonio. So Kathleen Sebelius is going to be hitting the campaign trail courtesy of our taxpayer dime to sell us on Obamacare. Now, you've got to remember, I read the bill before Nancy Pelosi said we've got to pass it to find out what's in it. I warned you about what is in it. These death panels are in it. They are allowed to come into your home to see what is in your cabinets and refrigerator. They come into your home to see how you're raising your children. If they do not like the way you're raising your children, they will take your children from you. That goes out to those who are homeschooling. There is so much in this bill that is unconstitutional and against everything that we as Americans stand for, that this bill should never have seen the light of day. But they pulled the smoke and mirrors. They said, we have to have health care for everyone. Well, we have health care for everyone. We already have it. It exists here in the United States. There's not a single person that can be denied health care if they walk into a hospital emergency room. That is the law. Everyone is guaranteed health care by simply walking into a hospital emergency room. We've got community centers where doctors work pro bono. All you have to do is just take your little fingers and take them walking through the yellow pages, and you can find these medical centers all over the place. You don't know where they are? Go to your nearest church or temple, and the ministers and the rabbis all know where these places are because a lot of them donate to them to help keep them running. We have one here with our own church. All you have to do is ask one of us, and we'll be happy to escort you to the facility. There are medical that is given free all across the nation. No one is denied medical care because we do have medical care for everyone. We don't need to provide insurance for everyone. Everyone has health care in the United States. It is not denied because you have to simply just take your feet and walk into an emergency room, and you will be taken care of. So this lie that we need Obamacare because there's so many uninsured Americans is precisely that, nothing more than another lie. It's another way to control we the people. It's another way for government to get involved in our very lives, to control each and every aspect of it, from the moment you are conceived to even after you are buried. Government gets involved in your life. And we've got to turn around and say no. We've got to tell government to back off. That's what the Tea Party is about. That's what the 912 is about. That's the people that are constitutionalists. Limited government, but following the rule of law. We're not anarchists. We're not terrorists. We just want the rule of the law to be followed and be followed equally by everyone. That's what we're all about. Well, we're going to be coming back on Tuesday with a great guest. We're going to have Mike Cutler rejoining us. He is a retired INS agent. He's testified before Congress, given countless lectures on immigration, and he has his own weekly radio show, too. So Mike Cutler will be joining us this Friday. And then next Tuesday, we're going to be rejoined with Doug Briney, our Super Country Cowboy. He's got a new album that's being released on November 5th, and we're scooping the rest of the world by playing his album ahead of time. We will be talking to Doug about his brand new album, and we're scooping the rest of the music industry because you will hear it all here first. And I was listening to a lot of his tunes the other day, and the stuff is good. I mean, his first album was good. This is fantastic stuff, and you got to be with us to hear it. So Doug Briney will be joining us on November 1st. And hopefully we will have our co-host coming back right after November 5th, the election. So November 5th, we'll probably be doing a special election, going across the country, seeing what races are running and how the polls are running on them. And crossing our fingers, let's hope we take a couple extra seats back from the House and the Senate. So we'll be back on the 5th, doing an election series, and hopefully we'll have a guest also with us on the 5th. So join us this Friday for Mike Cutler, the following Tuesday with Doug Briney and his brand new country album, as we scoop the rest of the music industry and we play his album here on air. And then we will be talking election. So I want to thank everyone here that has joined us today. And I want to thank our guest, Ellis Washington. We had a blast with him. And what a shout out to Cool Mike. You know we miss you, Cool Mike, so hurry up and come on back. So until then, I want to wish everyone a happy, healthy, and safe weekend, and we'll see you here again on the 2nd with Mike Cutler. So until then, good night, God bless, and be safe.
If you find yourself in trouble, count on me, my friend. I'll get right up in trouble.
You've been listening to Southern Sense Blog Talk Radio. Producer and your hostess extraordinaire is Ann Ubelis. The theme music, American Stand Up, is written and performed by Don Fortney. For more from Don, check out his webpage, teapartymusic.web.com. Southern Sense is a proud member of Ghost Fighter Radio and Freedom Media Network. Southern Sense is common sense. Take it out, Don.
American.
Stand up, let's make it.
loud, American, 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 American.